everyone. Welcome to First Things First. I am Jenna Wolf. That is Chris Carter, the Hall of Famer, and that is Nick Wright. It is Thursday.
Oh my God,
we're shaking hands.
Yeah, Jenna Wolf, I didn't want to leave you out. You sometimes feel left out.
He likes to get a little party. He's jealous of
that's
it.
A little, that's
oh,
good.
No, no, no. That I'm not jealous of. Whatever y'all doing with your fingers
okay.
Three times a day, not interested.
Way past where that needed to go. Big show on the docket today. Patriots might be the best team in the AFC. There's an outlet that thinks so. Cowboys are on the verge of locking up the NFC East, but we start with a random Lakers-Spurs game in early December. Because when LeBron James is as good as he was last night, how could you not start there? LeBron scored 20 of his 42 points in the fourth quarter to help the Lakers win their fourth straight game, 121-113. San Antonio led by 8 in the fourth, mind you, until LeBron realized he is the greatest basketball player on earth. Went 7 of 8 from the field in the final 9.5 minutes, including 3 buckets from deep. Again, Lakers beat the Spurs. Here's LeBron James after the game.
We were down 8, and they've had our number, up until this point. They beat us the first 2 games and beat us on our home floor. We've been playing so well at home. We want to try to continue that. But, once I got in, it was just a matter of me just trying to make plays and see what happened.
LeBron, is it fair to say maybe some of the comments that or questions that were asked about your workload, maybe you took that a little personally?
Not for what? I'm past the personal stage. Yeah, I can do whatever. I can have a huge workload. I can have a not so huge workload. It doesn't matter for me. But what's most important is seeing my teammates make huge shots in the fourth quarter. Jay Hart out of rhythm all game because of foul trouble. He makes 2 huge threes in the fourth quarter. Zoe makes a huge 3 on the left wing. Kuz making the plays down the stretch as well. That's what's most important to me. I can care less about the narrative about me that. It doesn't matter. I'm stapled in this game.
You get the feeling you could ask LeBron about any minute over the course of any of the fourth quarters, and he'll say, I'll tell you where everyone was, who shot what, how much they shot, who was winning at the time. I mean, he has that whole game mapped out as a game plan. How impressive was LeBron's performance last night, Nick, especially what he did in the fourth quarter?
Yeah, the fourth quarter was spectacular. I mean, he checked in with 10 minutes left in the fourth earlier than he typically would, earlier than Luke Walton has been wanting him to, because Brandon Ingram turned his ankle in the first quarter of this game, never came back. Their rotation was screwed up from Jump Street because they had that foul trouble that LeBron was talking about. Josh Hart got 3 fouls seemingly in the span of 90 seconds, so he was out of the rotation. Kuz got a few fouls early, so you had to go. Svi Mykhailiuk was getting minutes, and this is how all of a sudden you're down 91-83 with 10 minutes left in the game. And then LeBron, orchestrating everything, leads them to to 38 points in the last 10 minutes of this game, a comfortable win, and not only the shots he's hitting from deep, but the shots that he laid out there, that he assists.
Which are more important.
Right, which he says are more important. The shots that he assists or that he got the hockey assists on, where he claps the defense on him, kicks it out, and then there's another pass after that. Every basket that was scored once LeBron came into this game had his imprint on. And so what you saw last night was a Lakers team, they needed to beat the Spurs. Not just because the Spurs right now have the second worst record in the West. Not just because the Lakers need to protect home court because they haven't been a good road team. But they play the Spurs for a fourth and final time day after tomorrow. You can't risk getting swept by San Antonio in a down year by San Antonio 4-0. This was a team that, as LeBron said, had their number. This game was slipping away from them, and then LeBron was spectacular in that fourth quarter.
So not only San Antonio, did they have a chance to go 3-0. That's not the message you want to send. And as you mentioned, San Antonio's not even having a good year, but it's the style for which they were getting ready to go down 2-0 because the other two games were fairly close, too. Then at the end, San Antonio, sticking to what they're doing, understanding how to close out games and a little more veteran experience, that's how they won those other two games. The Lakers could have won those two games.
Yep.
I mean, but in seeing this, LeBron sees, man, about halfway through the fourth quarter, I need to be able to do something. And for Laker fans, I know you guys consider yourself big basketball fans, but this is what LeBron James does. If you put guys on his team who can make shots, because we've had quarters where LeBron scores 20 points, but his ability to be able to dominate the quarter, not only with his scoring, but with his passing, that's what makes him unique. But to see the confidence of these young players be able to grow in critical situations, in big matchups, like against San Antonio. That part right there was I was glad to see. And now back to what Magic Johnson and Kobe Bryant.
Yeah.
Hey, man, y'all need to leave that dude alone. Now, both of y'all got tremendous basketball pedigrees, but LeBron James, if you decide to take the ball out of his hands, you are deciding, I'm getting ready to allow him to play where he's not playing at his strength. LeBron needs the ball. I mean, I'm all about development, Lonzo, God bless him. All right? I'm all about that. But if you're LeBron, with his skill level now, he is best suited to be your point guard, your point forward. He needs to be able to dominate the ball because he will allow the other players to continue to develop. The more he has the ball, I believe the better they'll develop.
Well, and as LeBron's got a four-year contract in L.A., as he ages, he's not going to age into a small ball center. He's going to age into a point guard. He's going to age into a guy who is even more of a pass-first player. I think as he ages, his assist numbers will go up as his scoring goes down. And he's always going to find the open man. That's right in the fourth quarter. Going into the fourth quarter, the Lakers were 7 of 28 from 3. In the fourth quarter, they were 7 of 11 from 3. LeBron hadn't hit a 3 himself in the fourth quarter. And it was funny. If you watch the game, I know it was very, very late last night. The first 3 he made, the first 3 he took in the fourth quarter, he follows the shot because he thinks it's off. He runs in. He's surprised he made it. That thing gave him the confidence to shoot a 36-footer a few minutes later. That gave them a lead, and then a critical one from the left wing a few minutes after that. Like, his shot started to fall, and his teammates' shots started to fall.
So that's interesting because I saw last night's game differently. What I saw last night was a team that tried for three quarters to be able to play without leaning on LeBron. And then in the fourth quarter, LeBron said, well, I got to go out and let me just win this. So let me just turn it on. Like, I can turn it off and turn it on when I need it, which is an incredible skill to have, which most players can't do. But I just wonder if the team is leaning a little too heavily on LeBron to do that, to bail them out, if you will, when they need him.
As you can see in LeBron's interview, and you're right, the first three parts of this game, they were doing what they normally do. It's LeBron is going to allow the game to find him. Very seldom ever. Now, we've seen in some epic playoff games, and Nick and I have been very, very fortunate to see, okay, we want to watch LeBron the first 6 minutes. In a few of those playoff games, he decides, I'm going in as LeBron the scorer. But typically, LeBron, 95% of the time, 98% of the time, he's going to come in as a facilitator and let the game come to him. And that's to the benefit of these young players. Because let me tell you, LeBron could start the first quarter the way he started that fourth quarter. So it's part of them growing as a team, and that's still part of who LeBron. Man, I walked out of the Garden last year with LeBron, yeah, allowing his teammates.
CeCe mumbling on his breath, this guy tell me better than Jordan.
I was letting everyone know in that suite. Mm-hmm. Michael Jordan, if he was here, Michael would have put on a show for me.
And then what happened once you left?
And then I was on the subway, and Nick was like, I told you.
LeBron did this.
And I got home just in time for LeBron as he assists someone and scores another bucket as they come back and beat the Knicks.
Right in his cancer's face after talking all that trash. That was a fun game. But here's the thing that I think people need to adjust, and this is Kobe, this is Magic, this is everybody. I'm going to use a video game analogy in honor of our great statistician, Dusty. LeBron's ability to take over games,
please make it Pac-Man.
It is not a turbo boost that you can only press the button 3 times. It's like, oh, now it's March, we're out of it. Like, it is a replenishable resource. You should go to it as often as you can. As long as it is not isolation ball, which is not what he's going to do, that is going to deprive his teammates of opportunities to shoot the ball, he's not going to wear out. We're not going to get to May and be like, man, he's tired.
But at some point, it will not be a replenishable resource.
Well, let's worry about that problem. Let's not borrow worry. Let's worry about that problem when we start to see any evidence of that problem.
Sure.
One other thing that should be noted, since November 1st, the Lakers' defense allowing 99 points per 100 possessions. That would be the best mark in the entire NBA over the course of the season. Since November 1st, after that rough October, that plan they had of LeBron will be an offense unto himself, let's bring in athletic, young, potentially good defenders, that is something that is working for them.
And you have to give Magic Johnson credit. People didn't see that. When he said that initially, we're going to be a lot tougher, and we're going to be a better defensive team. You're starting to see that, Nick. Great stat there since November 1st.
All right, we're going to take a break. Stick with basketball. Kevin Durant weighs in on the King a little bit later. And then coming up next is the NFC East on the line this Sunday. Next, this is First Things First. All right, time for drawing a blank. You want to play?
Yeah, I'd love to, please.
LeBron James continues to impress this season as he campaigns to bring a superstar to the Lakers next year. But Kevin Durant said players dislike the, quote, toxic media environment around the King. So, CC, the superstar that would best fit with LeBron next season is blank.
The least toxic of all the top five players in the NBA, Kawhi Leonard. No maintenance. Also, the main reason, LeBron needs shooters. Kawhi is such an underrated three-point shooter. You start looking about, do they match together? Kawhi, because the way he can shoot the ball, LeBron, the way he's increased his range, mm-hmm. they would be nasty. That's why KD is trying to sabotage somebody going there before they get there and kick off in his tail. That's like, oh, it's toxic over there. Well, how was it in OKC? Well, what about when you was on the Warriors bench and a dude called you a B? That seemed pretty toxic to me.
Kawhi would be an awesome fit. To me, he's the second best fit behind Anthony Davis. And that's more just about positional situation. Both Kawhi and LeBron are wings. Obviously, Anthony Davis is a big who also can shoot. I think Anthony Davis would be the best fit of anyone in the league. Kawhi would be two. Klay Thompson might be three. But I'm going to go with the brow, Anthony Davis.
Yeah, that's a good answer.
That's a good one, too.
That's a good answer.
All right, moving on to football now.
I almost forgot him.
With the remaining question. Head coach Pat Shurmur says he can't answer whether Eli will be the starting quarterback in 2019. So, Nick, the Giants' starting quarterback next season will be blank.
Week one of next season, Eli Manning. I don't think they're getting rid of him. I don't think he's retired.
Was I supposed to ask week two?
No. I'm simply saying I'm not predicting necessarily he'll finish the season.
Sure.
Because they could draft a quarterback and still have Eli be the week one starter. So I think Eli Manning's going to be the starting quarterback and named the starting quarterback to start next season. Giants won too many games. Eli's actually counting stats are too good this year. I think they might run it back with him, much to the chagrin of Giants fans.
My answer on this one, I got to put something around this because I don't have a source. I don't have any inside information. I actually talked to Haskins a few times. Dwayne Haskins.
Ooh.
When you say you don't have a source,
I don't have a source. I have not heard he's coming out. He should actually stay in college. He's a redshirt sophomore. Really, really young kid. Man, his potential is limitless. But he needs a little tightening up on his throwing motion.
It's tough to stay if you're going to be a top player.
I'm just telling you, this kid, he's only a sophomore. He got two more years of college. You know who last had that? Andrew Luck.
I love this.
Remember Andrew Luck when he went back to school? I know a lot of people in Michigan are cheering today. Oh, yeah, get that guy out of there. Give us some type of chance. Buckeye fans are, no, Chris, don't say that. We need Haskins back. I'm just saying.
See, you sound like me on the radio. You're having an argument with yourself right now. Think he's going to the Giants, but you should stay in school. You need more development. Your talent's limitless. You're going to be a top 10 pick, but you should come back. Michigan fans want you to leave. I want you to stay. That was great. So it's Haskins, but you hope he stays. Got it.
With just four games left on the schedule, teams at the top jockeying for playoff position. But being the favorite doesn't guarantee anything in the NFL. So you see, the team most likely to be upset this weekend, is blank.
Well, there's no game. There's a few that I think potentially are really high for an upset, but I'm going to go with the Browns. The way the Carolina Panthers, and not Cam Newton, I believe Cam's going to play good, but their offensive line struggled against that defensive front of Cleveland, and I believe that secondary, especially their cornerbacks, will struggle against Baker Mayfield. Browns beat Panthers, my biggest upset for week number 13.
Tom Brady in his career against Miami on the road, 7-10. Since 2013, Tom Brady has as many losses in Florida as he does at Gillette.
Yeah, you can't have everything, man. You can't have a hot wife. You can't be hot. When you go to hot weather, you know what happens? He falls apart. You can't have hot all together. You just can't do it.
So I'm going to say Dolphins over the Pats. Best chance for an upset.
Jenna, you with me on the hot?
I am 100%
with you. They got it covered, though, don't they?
You know that.
Daddy, mama, the baby's got to look good.
I mean, they do. Little Vivi just had a birthday yesterday. Lamar Jackson has quietly won his first three games as a starter for the Ravens. Instagram. Okay. Now all five.
Check out Jenna on the gram, Flossin.
All five first-round quarterbacks have three wins to name their through week 13. Nick, my question to you: the rookie quarterback you would want moving forward? I got there. It took a while. Uh-huh. Is blank.
I think what Jenna was saying is all the five rookies have won three games this year. They're all like exactly three wins.
I just used different words. I laughed a couple times.
Baker Mayfield. This was, I mean, this has to me been very evident. There's a good discussion about who would be the second choice, but the first choice has to be Baker.
Oh, it's consensus. It's around the table. Shit, Jenna likes a little Baker Mayfield. She's not into edgy, but she'll take a little edgy.
It's not that. I'm not into beards, but I like his.
Jenna,
I didn't
know. What is happening?
The whole show. The whole show was with Baker. Five quarterbacks first round, the whole show, Baker.
Ending with the AFC playoff race.
All right, here we go. I got this. I'm good. PFF, Pro Football Focus, released their power rankings, naming the Pats, the Chiefs, and the Chargers as the three teams at the top of the AFC. CC, the team most likely to represent the AFC in the Super Bowl is blank.
I'm going with the most dependable organization, the most dependable owner, the most dependable coach, and the most dependable quarterback. We come down to the fourth quarter. Who am I going to put my money on? I'm putting them on the people that do business up there in New England, in Gillette, because that's what I believe. I believe they're going to have the number one seed. I'm going with the Pats.
I think it's important not to be a prisoner of the moment, but I also think it's important not be a prisoner.
But where are we right now, though?
In the moment.
Oh, okay.
I think it's also important not be a prisoner of history. I understand history says the Patriots. The evidence we have this year says the Kansas City Chiefs. As long as they stay where they're at as the one seed, and I believe they will, I don't think anyone's going to Arrowhead and beating Pat Mahomes and Andy Reid and that Chiefs team, despite their history and despite the lack of Kareem Hunt. I'm going to say the Kansas City Chiefs. They've been the best team in all of football this year.
All right, we shall see. Got to take a break. Coming up, why is Kevin Durant taking shots at LeBron? That's next. This is First Things First.
I don't know.
All right, moving on to the Lakers. LeBron scored 20 of his 42 points in the fourth quarter last night to help L.A. win their fourth straight 121-113 over the Spurs. San Antonio led by 8 in the fourth until LeBron was like, well, hold on, I am the greatest player on earth. He went 7 of 8 from the field in the final 9.5 minutes, including 3 buckets from deep. Here is LeBron James after the game.
We were down 8, and they've had our number, up until this point. They beat us the first 2 games and beat us on our home floor. We've been playing so well at home. We want to try to continue that. But, once I got in, it was just a matter of me just trying to make plays and see what happened.
LeBron, is it fair to say maybe some of the comments that or questions that were asked about your workload, maybe you took that a little personally?
Not for what? I'm past the personal stage. I can do whatever. I can have a huge workload. I can have a not so huge workload. It doesn't matter for me. But what's most important is seeing my teammates make huge shots in the fourth quarter. Jay Hart out of rhythm all game because of foul trouble. He makes 2 huge threes in the fourth quarter. Zoe makes a huge 3 on the left wing. Kuz making the plays down the stretch as well. That's what's most important to me. I can care less about the narrative about me. That it doesn't matter. I'm stapled in this game.
Boy, doesn't he just have a mental blueprint of everything that happens over
the
course
of the game? Yeah, he likes to show off a little bit. He squints like he's really it's a skill.
How impressive was LeBron's performance last night, especially what he did in the fourth quarter?
Very impressive. And for those, Laker Nation, what a treat. What you're getting ready to see, because to me, LeBron's even better than he was his first stint in Cleveland. He's better than he was in Miami, because that's the first time where LeBron said that's when he went away to college. His game really evolved there. When he came back to Cleveland, except the finals. Now, if I have a regular season, the finals, the way he played, with the Lakers, with him collapsing the defense, his ability to be able to handle the basketball, his ability to be able to shoot from deep. He has not shot the ball as well as he is shooting the ball. This is at this late in his career is the best that he's ever shot the ball. So that right there, it's such a treat. And it's about other guys making play. He talked about that fourth quarter. Yeah, they scored 42 points. Mm-hmm. Kuzma with 9. Ball with 4. Hart off the bench, not having any type of momentum and rhythm, getting 6. That's because of LeBron's 20. And that's what we couldn't see in Cleveland. He was trying to make plays, but the guys weren't finishing the plays. And that's what we saw last night. But more convincing is these younger players, they have to see that ball going in. Man, LeBron, we're used to seeing this. Now, we're not used to seeing this in December. And I can say NBA-wide, I've been watching NBA for a long time. This is some of the best basketball I have seen before Christmas. You're talking about the individual performances. Man, last night, what, Steph had 42.
LeBron had 42. You had Paul George 47. Yeah, Kawhi, we just talked about.
I mean, it's amazing. And LeBron James still being the centerpiece of the basketball world. Yes, it was a great fourth quarter, but his scoring wasn't the key. It was how the younger players started making plays, and that's what led to the Lakers winning.
To your point, C, about the level LeBron's playing offensively, there's a line of demarcation. Now, defensively, he's not as good as he was in Miami. Like, he peaked the year, he nearly won and should have won Defensive Player of the Year in Miami the 12-13 season. Since then, he's deteriorated defensively. But from the moment, from Game 5 of the NBA Finals, the year they came back from 3-1 down, to where we sit here today, he's in the midst of the best offensive stretch of his career. The year after they won the NBA Finals, he set his career high in rebounds and assists per game. Last year, we saw the team he carried, and this year, he's doing
the Last year, we saw the assists because the amount of time he was handling the ball.
Absolutely. He was setting career highs in rebounds and assists in years 14 and then again in year 15 assist-wise. So, like, he is somehow continuing offensively to evolve his game, most notably with the range shooting. But in last night's game specifically, they're down 91-83 when he checks into the game in the fourth quarter. Brandon Ingram got hurt early. Josh Hart couldn't get in a rhythm, as he mentioned, because of foul trouble. Kuz picked up a couple fouls quickly where they had to change their rotation. They're going deep onto the bench to Svi Mykhailiuk, who can't hit a shot early. And they've already lost twice to the Spurs. And from that moment forward, 10 minutes left in the fourth until the end of the game, the Lakers scored 38 points. LeBron was directly involved in 34 of them. Scored 20 himself, assisted on 7, and then Hockey assisted on another 7. Like, the way that team as a whole played offensively in the fourth with everything rolling through LeBron, that is their blueprint. And you now all of a sudden
can you
look,
do that, though, for the three quarters before?
Well, I don't think you –
Or
no.
Do you not need it?
Well, you'd always love to have it.
Yeah.
But I think that LeBron knows how to throttle his energy.
Yeah.
And defensively, all of a sudden, the Lakers since November 1st, they're giving up 99 points per 100 possessions. That would be the best defense in the NBA. Since that moment, they're the fourth best defense in the NBA. So LeBron will take care of the offense as long as guys are hitting shots, and the team is playing very good defensively. That's how they've gone on this, they've won 11 of 14.
All right, speaking of LeBron James, Kevin Durant had some takes on the King, but he kept them to himself.
No, he didn't.
That's hilarious. Obviously, I'm kidding. KD was asked about free agents coming to join LeBron in L.A. Here's what he told Bleacher Report. Listen carefully. So much hype comes from being around LeBron from other people. He has so many fanboys in the media. Even the beat writers just fawn over him. I'm like, we're playing basketball here, and it's not even about basketball at certain times, certain points. So I get why anyone wouldn't want to be in that environment, because it's toxic, especially when the attention is expletive attention, fluff. It's not LeBron's fault at all. It's just the fact you have so many groupies in the media that love to hang on every word. Just get out of the way and let us play basketball. When you randomly start with someone on the desk, Nick, I'll point to you, your thoughts.
All right, so aside from the toxicity part of it, let's remove that for a moment.
Okay.
Kevin Durant's right about a lot of this. LeBron James, I wouldn't use the word fanboys, just like I wouldn't have used the word blog boys the way he did a year ago when he was calling out me and Shannon by name. And now when he's talking about this, I think it's pointed comments. I think I'm one of those people. What up, C?
Yeah, I think that I've been very, very fortunate to know LeBron and his group and to kind of know of his life and what happens behind the scenes. I was very, very fortunate to be good friends with Michael Jordan, traveled around the country, playing golf, going to championships, and then my brother was drafted by the Lakers. So I have seen, in the last 40 years, I have seen three of the most iconic players. And if you remove Durant's comment with LeBron, you could just put those other guys in there. Magic Johnson, oh, he got his coach fired. All right, with the Los Angeles Lakers. A lot of the same thing. Michael Jordan, it's legendary. The stories, how tough it was to be. They were the Beatles. And Jenna, you know, we were following Michael Jordan. It was difficult. And now with LeBron, it's still the same thing. So I didn't take those comments as if we haven't seen that ever before.
Well, and maybe Kevin Durant, just because of his age, doesn't have the history you have as far as seeing it with Magic, seeing it with Michael. I mean, Kevin Durant's younger than I am. So, like, but it's what he's talking about is guys in the media. And when he says beat writers, he's talking about Brian Winder. He's talking about my pal Dave McMiniman. When he's talking about the national media, myself, Shannon, guys that are unabashed fans of LeBron while being commentators. And to which I would say to Kevin Durant is this. How could you not be? This is a distinctly American story of amazing success against unimaginable odds and a guy who has had unreal pressure and expectations put on him at every step, scrutiny the likes of which Durant dealt with about 10% of the scrutiny LeBron dealt with his whole career once he went to Golden State, and has off the court kind of crumbled underneath it. LeBron has never had a public misstep. His biggest mistake publicly, raised $3 million for charity. He put his friends through college to then run his business. He literally built a school in Cleveland and is putting 1,200 kids through college himself. Like, absolutely, I'm a fan of LeBron James. And why would you not be? In addition to, oh, yeah, he's creating the best basketball resume, arguably, in league history. Nobody has had the on-court and off-court impact in this league maybe ever, certainly since Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, as far as handling the political side of things, the social side of things, and sure, the basketball. And for KD to say it creates a toxic environment, I don't know what's toxic about that. I think it's honest. I think there's some jealousy from KD because he is such a great player and doesn't get nearly the adoration. But he hasn't earned it as of yet to the degree LeBron has.
Is there any truth to what he was saying, that star players in the league just don't want to play with LeBron? See?
Not from what I hear. And I got a pretty good relationship with the guy who's a star in this league, and that's not what they're saying. And I think that has a lot to do with Kevin Durant and him leaving Golden State. I think it's easier, because you've never heard Kevin Durant say anything like this before. And I've seen him make missteps as far as his interview. I don't expect him to be an expert as far as the media. So for me, I'm not going to be as critical as Nick or someone else might be, because I don't really care that much. I don't expect him to be an expert basketball player and also be an expert,
sure,
as far as the media is concerned. Yes.
The premise of this article was, the headline was, why doesn't anyone want to play with LeBron? And I just think it's a flawed premise. Yes, Kyrie wanted out. Now, the reporting on that is Kyrie, the breaking point for him was he found out he was being shopped. That made him mad, and so he wanted out. It was partially about wanting his own team, not wanting to be around LeBron, but it was really, oh, you might trade me for Paul George? Let me get out of here. And then there's Paul George, who re-signed with OKC before LeBron even signed with the Lakers. That was about Paul George wanting to stay in Oklahoma City, and guess what? Paul George, averaging a career high in points, rebounds, assists, steals, blocks,
he made
a good decision.
Yep.
If this summer comes around and they don't get anybody, and Anthony Davis says, you can trade me, but trade me anywhere but to the Lakers, then there'll be some credence to this. There's no evidence to me that league stars have said, don't want to play in Los Angeles with LeBron James.
Right. I think the word toxic, I believe he could have used another word. But Kevin Durant's been in a couple situations. I just wonder what that situation felt like. I wonder what it felt like when he decided to leave and go to Golden State, and they asked him, had he talked to Russ? And he said, yes. And come to find out, he hadn't talked to Russ. So I'm not going to call that a toxic environment, but I just wonder what that day was like, what that situation was like. I wonder what it was like to be between where Klay Thompson was sitting. I wish that could have been me. Mm-hmm. And one of my teammates said, man, we don't need you, B. We don't need you. We was winning championships before you got here. I wonder if that was kind of toxic or very, very spicy. I wish I just could have been there. So I've been live long enough to have seen both of those situations. So
There are certain athletes that have earned a somewhat of a reverence from the media. Tom Brady's one of them. Tom Brady, there's a lot of Tom Brady fanboys in the media. What is there to criticize? You know what? The guy hasn't made public mistakes that I can think of, and he doesn't even have the non-football stuff LeBron is going for him. LeBron's one of these guys. Derek Jeter, you could argue, was raised to that level. I don't look at what Kevin Durant said, aside from the toxic stuff, as wrong, but I also don't look at it as a negative. There are guys that Steph is on his way, by the way, to getting to that level as well, as far as who he is off the court and who he is on the court. And you can still say, you know, should have made those free throws against San Antonio.
Yeah.
You can still be critical of on-court failures, but recognize what the accomplishments are over now a decade and a half
and
professional
who the athlete,
career.
Who the person is. All right, got to take a break. Coming up, are we about to see another Super Bowl run from Tom Brady, speaking of which, and the Patriots next on First Things First. Welcome back to the show. Former NBA All-Star Carlos Boozer is here. So we've got two super tall people now and then two very, very average, short, average human
okay.
also sitting next to the tall people.
Yeah. Well
Sorry
done.
About that.
Still standing
now that
by you being tall, Nick?
I'm still doing that? I mean, I'm whatever 6'1 is what I am.
Okay.
You're above average. You're a tall guy.
Thank you, Boo.
You're not taking
These guys got so
he's
got a joke going.
He's a point guard on the NBA.
Absolutely. Yeah. I'd look down at Chris Paul.
He's no
Wow. So disrespectful.
I love CP3, but it's accurate. It's accurate.
All right, Booze. Let's talk unemployment rate. At this rate, Carmelo Anthony will be on the shelf for a good while. Hasn't played in a game since being shut down by the Rockets earlier this year. But now, according to reports, LeBron James says he'd be interested in Melo, perhaps joining him on the Lakers. Keep in mind, LA's been on a bit of a tear recently, a good role, winning its last four games. What do you think, Carlos? Good idea or bad idea? Or is there an underlying reason why?
Obviously, Carmelo and LeBron are very close. They're almost like brothers. So, you know, Melo's sitting out right now, being let go by the Rockets, who are struggling and tanking, but that's a whole other topic. For LeBron.
That's an interesting one.
Yeah, for LeBron, he's one of those guys that gets the best out of his players. You know, Lance Stephenson's over there playing well. They got Beasley coming off a little bit here and there. If he's able to get Carmelo, especially with the rumors out there trying to package a deal around one of the players over there to get Anthony Davis to come over, if you have a Carmelo that can give you 13, 14, 15 points consistently, that helps a lot.
So, listen, Melo's one of my favorite guys. I'm a Syracuse guy like he is. I also think he has been I love basketball analytics, but I think the analytics wave has drastically underrated what he's accomplished and how hard his job was. Like, people say, oh, he's inefficient. Ask Iverson talks about this. It's hard to put up 30 shots a night. Like, you know this as well as anybody.
It's hard on 2K to put up 30 shots a night.
He became a punchline when he shouldn't. He is one of the all-time scorers of his generation. So I all respect to future first ballot Hall of Famer Carmelo Anthony. I don't think he has anything left. I think that Chris Paul was the draft class after Carmelo and LeBron. And we are seeing Chris Paul all of a sudden look like, I'm not trying to shade him twice in a segment, but like he seems to have fallen off a cliff. Dwayne Wade is at a different part of his career. Like, LeBron is distorting our view on what you're supposed to look like in year 16. I don't think LeBron, though, actually really wants Carmelo on the Lakers. I think he doesn't want Carmelo's career to end this way. And I think he was asked about it by Joe Vardon. I don't know that, but Joe Vardon's the one reporting it. He's covered LeBron for a long time in Cleveland, and I think what happened was he says, oh, yeah, of course. Who wouldn't want Melo? Trying to promote interest in his very close friend, because nobody wants their career to end this way. Suddenly, where you get traded by one team, waived by another team, like he would be on the buyout of a buyout. So I don't think he'd be worse for the Lakers than, for example, Lance Stephenson. But I also don't think in 2018 Carmelo Anthony has a lot of value as an NBA player.
No, I'm right there with you. And I guess for me, it's not a question of what Carmelo would bring to the Lakers from an offensive standpoint, because I think he would help to space the floor. Mm-hmm. But my only question, I guess I have to pose this to you, is how does he fit defensively? Because he doesn't have the foot speed to match up against a small forward, and he doesn't have the size to match up against a power forward. So I think from that standpoint, he would be a liability to the Lakers. And I just don't know, with the production that you're going to get from him on the offensive end, whether he's coming off the bench or whether he's a starter, whether that outweighs him being a liability on the defensive side of the court.
Yeah, he's never been a lockdown defender. I mean, Melo, like he said, is a traditional 24-point-per-game scorer, one of the best scorers of his generation. But as far as defensively...
But he's not that player anymore.
No, he's not that guy. You know, at this stage in his career, he come off... They're trying to make him into, like, a spot-up shooter in Houston. That's not really his game. Melo's more of a one-on-one guy, jab, take advantage, offensive rebound, get to the free-throw line kind of guy. They had him just shooting jump shots. So I feel like if he did go to the Lakers, I feel like LeBron is the guy who's like a Tom Brady of our game who can figure out a way to maximize Carmelo Anthony.
I think LeBron would maximize him, but I also think I know enough people that were around the Cavs last year mm-hmm. or on that team that said when D-Wade came there, that actually was a bit of a problem. Not because D-Wade's a bad guy, but because all of a sudden there was the whole team in the locker room and then it's LeBron with his arm around D-Wade. Like they, mm-hmm. because they have such a close relationship. I wonder if something similar could happen here. And the other thing I wanted to ask you is, even if you could maximize Carmelo Anthony, we talk so much about the growth of the young players, about Brandon Ingram, about Kyle Kuzma. Do you think that could potentially stunt possession? If he's your guy off the bench, your scorer off the bench, when those minutes could be going to letting Brandon Ingram run the offense when LeBron goes to the bench, like, right. could you be stunting the growth of guys who are more important for the Lakers 2 and 3 years down the line?
Yeah, that's a great point. For me, it doesn't make sense right now. They're rolling, like, as she said, they're rolling right now. They're playing very good basketball. But if they make a move to get another player, like an Anthony Davis,
sure.
and they package players around an Ingram, where you lose maybe a Caldwell Pope and maybe another perimeter player, then you bring in a Melo where you actually need a perimeter player, that makes more sense. But right now, it stunts their growth a little bit.
Well, here's the thing. I don't feel like 2018-2019 season was the year that Magic and Rob Pelinka thought that they were going to be competing for a championship. I think they were waiting right. to get to the summer of 2019 right. where they'll have some options with free agency. And then, of course, some of the trades for the big guys. You're talking about Anthony Davis. Mm-hmm. He's one of the names that pops up. They'll be more realistic. I think that this is a situation where you take advantage of having a season. I'm not going to call it a throwaway, but this is just an opportunity to get extended minutes for those young players to see what they can develop into, but more importantly, to see how they would fit in the construction of your team moving forward, whether you want them as a piece once you're able to attract another big-time free agent.
But Melo had an issue just coming off the bench when he played in Houston. He would have a much, much reduced role here, and he would have to be okay with, whether it's in L.A. or anywhere else, if you're saying he's struggling on defense, he's not not playing the role of the spot-up shooter, he's going to have to be okay with limited minutes and a limited role on a team.
How hard is that? Because you're a guy who obviously at your peak was one of the four or five best big men in basketball and an all-star level player, but you didn't just play 6 years. Later in your career, that was not your role anymore.
Right.
How hard is that mentally to adjust from when offenses used to run through you, when you used to be the feature, the second feature guy, to where you just have a tertiary role? How tough is that?
I mean, it can be. It depends on how your ego is. Like, my ego was, I wanted to win at the end of my career. So my whole thing was about whatever it took to win. And for me, with the Bulls team that we had an MVP in Derrick Rose. We had Defensive Player of the Year in Joakim Noah, yep. All-Star in Luol Deng. We had a squad full of guys that were very accomplished and were very good. So we all sacrificed a little bit for the greater good. But then we ran into LeBron. And we couldn't get to the finals. But that being said, it's all about your ego. If you put your ego to the side and want to just win, it's a little easier. But if you still want to be the man, you still have that bravado, you still want to take 20 shots, it's a problem.
I think it's really tough for guys that, and there's only been a few that have been able to do it, that were quite Carmelo Anthony's caliber. And there's no disrespect to you whatsoever.
Yeah, no
question. But guys, Carmelo, for a brief period of time, was absolutely in the discussion for second, third best player in the world.
Mm-hmm. Right.
To go from that to the role you're talking about
is
an adjustment. We've seen Dirk do it.
Now, Vince Carter
has mm-hmm. done it as well as anyone mm-hmm. I've ever seen. Mm-hmm. Ray Allen.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
we have seen some guys do it. Jason Kidd did it in a different type of way where he was still impactful but was a different player. But it's AI couldn't do it.
No.
You know what I mean? Like, I'm not picking on AI. There's a long list of guys who, once they're not who they had always been, it is too hard to take that role. I think Melo for a long time didn't want to admit he wasn't who he's been.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And now, even if he thinks he's ready to admit it, I was at what might end up being the last great Carmelo Anthony game. It was in Brooklyn a few weeks ago before the Rockets move on from mm-hmm. him. I think he hit 7 threes. He had 30 points. He was swaggering. He was playing great.
Yeah, he did.
And it was awesome to see. I'm glad I was able to see it. But you got the feeling that his feeling wasn't, one more great moment. It was, see, this is who I can be. And unfortunately,
that's the problem.
And unfortunately, I just don't think, in fact, I know that's not who he can be consistently anymore.
All right, we've got to take a break. Carlos, stick around. Coming up, have Kyrie Irving and the Celtics put the rest of the East on notice? That's next on First Things First. Boozer, Boston destroyed the Knicks 128-100 last night with Kyrie leading the way with 22 points. The Celtics haven't met what we'd like to call their high expectations coming into this season, but they have won their last four after starting the year 10-10. Kyrie spoke about how Boston should approach the season moving forward. Take a listen.
We should have fun, you know, kicking people's ass. We really should. It should be competition itself. Should bring out the best out of you. And the way you bring the best out of your opponent is you play at a certain level where, you know, they either match it or they exceed it or they don't do anything at all and they just give up. And I think as a competitor, you take advantage of moments like that where you just throw yourself into the game, playing hard, not just trying to, you know, worry about what shots are coming or, you know, what schemes are running tonight. It's just playing hard, and then you err on the side of doing that, and then you use your talent to get you over the hump. So I think that we've been doing a great job of that so far.
Carlos, let me ask you, have the Celtics turned a corner, or have they just played four great games that they've put together?
Yeah, I think we'd like to say that they've turned the corner, but the teams that they played against, the Knicks, the Cavaliers, none of them are playoff teams. Mm. So it's kind of false, but at the same time, they're playing much better. You know, they got to figure out the rotation with Rozier. Guys like Marcus Smart are playing great. Also, guys like Marcus Morris are playing very well. So they have guys that are playing very well alongside Tatum and obviously Kyrie. But the reality is this. They started off very slow. We all thought that coming into the season, they'd be probably the favorite to go play against the Warriors in the finals. Now we're seeing Toronto is taking helm of the Eastern Conference. But these four wins that they got puts them three games out of fourth spot in the Eastern Conference. So they're right there, and it's still early December.
Listen, I don't think anyone thought, even when they had the slow start, oh, the Celtics might miss the playoffs. They're not in the position the Rockets are, a team with really high expectations that seems to be in total disarray. It wasn't just that this team was the overwhelming favorite to win the East. You had some credible people saying, you know what? If any team's built to challenge the Warriors, it's the Celtics that have all this depth, that have this great coaching, that have this great defense. And through 20 games, the defense was there, but it was one of the five worst offenses in all of basketball. Gordon Hayward was giving them nothing. Kyrie, the first half dozen games of the year, was playing really poorly, then turned it on. Yeah. The difference these last four games, yes, it's been the schedule. They haven't played a single team over 500. And by the way, that's going to continue. Their next five, Chicago, New Orleans, Washington, Atlanta, none of those teams are above 500 either. But the difference has been, during this four-game winning streak, they've had the best offense in the NBA. Mm-hmm. It's 125 points per 100 possessions. Like, their offense has been firing. Now, is that something figured out? Is that the defense? Is that the opponent? It's probably a combination of the two. But the real question for the Celtics is not, can they get to the four seed? The question is, can they at the very least duplicate what they did last year, which is go to the Eastern Conference Finals? And when I see Philly, which is better now that they've added Jimmy Butler. Mm-hmm. Milwaukee, which is better now that they have a living, breathing head coach. Toronto, which is better now that they have Kawhi Leonard. And to me, Boston sits about where I was a man on an island, thought they were going to sit at the beginning of the year. They're the fourth best team in the East. And they've got to do work to get to the fourth best team in the East. But I think that is where they went into the year. And I think that's where they're going to finish the year.
Well, I got confidence in Brad Stevens that this Boston Celtics team will figure it out, because we have to be honest in our assessment of it. They have a lot of talent on this team. So, I mean, when you look at the depth that they have, it's as good as any team in the Eastern Conference. So I think they'll figure it out. I think what they're doing right now, though, in terms of this win streak, is a product of the soft part of the schedule, as you mentioned. But that week leading into Christmas, that's when we're going to find out what the Boston Celtics are all about, because they got Milwaukee in there. They got the 76ers. I think Memphis and San Antonio. Yeah. Like, they're going to get their oil checked in that part of the schedule. We're going to find out about that. But in terms of what's going on the offensive end, I think with everybody being healthy, there's a little bit of a learning curve in terms of trying to figure out how we're going to all fit together. Because this is the Boston Celtics team that we envisioned in terms of the people that they have on their roster available to them coming into the 2017-2018 season. But this is their first time trying to play together and seeing how it all works. But I think this Celtics team will figure it out. It's still relatively early in the NBA season. We're talking about the first quarter of the season.
Right.
We're not going to find out who this team actually is until the calendar gets to late January, early February.
Carlos, why is it so hard when you have an abundance of talent on your team? Guys who've played, this is another rookie year. They played with other talent. They played together, a good part of them. Why is it so hard to take so much talent and make it gel? Why does that all fall on Brad Stevens? And what's the problem with him trying to get this done?
Well, that's what you hire a coach to do, because at the end of the day, even what they had last year and what they accomplished last year going to the Eastern Conference Finals, as Nick said, going to Game 7, it's a whole different team this year, because you bring back a Kyrie Irving who was hurt, you bring back a Hayward who was hurt.
Hayward, yeah.
And so, like he said, you're trying to mix in all these guys to play at the same level, going after the same goal, and be okay with the roles. Again, it's an ego thing. They have more talent than they had last year because you added two stars to the team that weren't playing last year. But you got to put your ego to the side. Everybody has to sacrifice a little bit. And they may have gone through some stuff in the locker room where they were like, man, I need more shots. Man, I need more playing time. That happens on teams.
And it's not just that they added they got Kyrie back from injury, who was there for the first 60 games of last year, and Gordon, who was there for the first 6 minutes of last year. Right. But it's that guys who last year didn't view themselves as stars, like now Jason Tatum. Okay, you know, Jalen Brown took a level
up.
Terry Rozier, not a star, but went from a guy who was, you know, a fifth guard to a guy who a lot of people think is a starting guard in the NBA. But you mentioned earlier the best team you were on, that Bulls team that just couldn't get past LeBron. Mm-hmm. One of the things that made that team special, you guys had a ton of talent, but it was very distinct in their roles. Mm-hmm. Like, Derrick Rose was going to be the offensive creator.
Absolutely.
Joakim Noah was the best defensive player in basketball and actually was a great passer as
great
a center.
Passer.
Luol Deng was kind of going to do a little bit of everything. Like, you were great leadership, whether you were off the bench or not. Mm-hmm. Leadership, rebounding, toughness. Mm-hmm. You had all these boxes checked. The Celtics have a ton of talent, but it's a lot of overlapping roles. Like, Jason Tatum and Gordon Hayward, very similar in what their roles are going to be. Like, we saw Terry Rozier come in and be 75% of Kyrie Irving. There's an overlapping role. Like, so they have all this talent, but to me, it's pieces that don't fit together as well as the teams that we've seen that you're talking about, where everyone knows exactly what they're supposed to do.
But that's Brad Stevens' job. That's why they hired Brad Stevens, and he's a phenomenal coach. Mm-hmm. I don't know why he didn't get any votes for Coach of the Year from his peers, but he's a phenomenal coach, and that's his job to figure that out.
That is one
thing. Then, as you know, as players, we have to accept what the coaches give us. Sometimes we have a hard time doing that, but that's as players, it has to be a give and take where we accept what the coach wants us to do for the betterment of the team.
The team right now in the East where everybody knows their role is Toronto.
Ooh.
It's not just because Kawhi's playing great.
Good.
They look good because
Toronto's best team in the East, do you think, as well?
Right now, in December, absolutely.
Yeah, everybody knows exactly what they're there to do. Yeah. Kyle Lowry's there to distribute, add leadership. Kawhi's going to be the best player on both ends of the court. Anunoby, who has name I haven't been able to pronounce for 2 years, and Pascal Siakam, they know what their roles are as far as toughness and defense. Like, everybody knows exactly what they're there to do. Milwaukee, now they have real coaching, is in a similar situation.
Mm-hmm.
Philly, one of the reasons they, I don't think, have lived quite up to expectations is, what exactly is everyone supposed to do there? Boston's dealing with a similar thing.
All right. Carlos, thanks so much for hanging out
with
us.
Thanks for having me.
Much appreciated. Got to take a break. Coming up, back to football. Is Dak Prescott's future as the Cowboys quarterback on the line Sunday? We'll explain next on First Things First. We will start with the final game between two of the greatest of their generation, LeBron James and Dwayne Wade, reunited, and it feels so good. Heat at Lakers, first quarter, LeBron beats D. Wade off the dribble, two of his 28 on the night. We go to the fourth. Wade gets the layup, and that cuts the Laker lead to one. He had 15 points. Heat would go on a run, but LeBron pulls the Lakers within one with that dunk right there. Less than 10 seconds to go. Lakers up three. LeBron guarding who else? Wade, and Wade can't get the shot to go. Fitting that the two were guarding each other at the very end. Lakers win this one 108-105. Both got a little emotional after the game.
Like I've been saying all week, it's bittersweet, man. Every possession, you was just like, the next one is getting closer and closer to the last one. So a lot of emotions going on right now for me, just knowing I'm losing a brother in this game that I've had so much, so many wars with, so many wars on each other together and separate. So there's no better way than to end in the Staples Center, man. And this is my guy, man. This is my guy.
D-Wade, we talked about it this morning. Last night you had a glass of wine about this game, how big it's going to be as competitors. How do you feel now?
Yeah, it's tough. You know, this is what you play for. Playing against one of the greatest players ever. And whether we was teammates, whether we was opponents, we brought the best out of each other. And I'm just thankful that I had the opportunity to be able to be drafted at the same time as this guy. And the friendship that we have, you guys know that's beyond basketball. But I'm going to miss this, you know? Like, I'm going to miss the out of this, man.
Nice to see, nice to hear. What was your reaction to LeBron and Wade's final matchup last night, CeCe?
My reaction is two, because I'm a big fan of Dwayne Wade. Being a resident of South Florida, had season tickets for the Heat before Dwayne Wade got there, back to the Alonzo Mourning days, watching them win a championship before LeBron got there. So I've always been a big fan of Dwayne Wade, seeing him since they drafted him from Marquette, seeing him make an impact on the league, take over a franchise. And he's the king in South Florida. In Florida, you know, it's they call it Wade County after Dwayne Wade down there in Broward County. So it's been a pleasure to watch his career. But LeBron stated when he left Cleveland and went to Miami, he went away to college. And a lot of times when you get out of the home and away from your parents and you go to college, you meet people that really impact your life and you have relationships and a brotherhood or a sisterhood that continue on for a lifetime. And that's what LeBron did when he met with D-Wade. Collectively, between the two of them, they have six championships. Both of them have that one championship by themselves. Dwayne Wade, when he did it before he partnered up with LeBron, and LeBron when he went back to the land and delivered that championship a couple years ago. But also, ultimately, I believe LeBron James is going to own an NBA basketball team, and I believe Dwayne Wade probably will be a part of that contingent that might do things with him. They have a unique connection. Their families are well connected. They spend so much time off the court together. So, and as you can see with LeBron doesn't get emotional about a lot of things. He's left Cleveland twice, didn't get emotional about it. But you could see right there that Dwayne Wade, among all the players he's been close to, that's Bosh, and that's being
Chris Paul, Mello,
all those guys, the champ, yeah, you know, James all those Jones. Guys. He's got some unique relationships. But Dwayne Wade has meant something special to him. And I believe also because Dwayne Wade was such a good basketball player that he challenged LeBron. He could do things that LeBron couldn't do. And it takes a special person to win a championship for a franchise and then tell a guy, I'm turning the franchise over to you.
Well, that's the key. Dwayne Wade was a made man before he and LeBron teamed up. And LeBron was an all-time great before they teamed up, but a disappointing all-time great as far as winning. D-Wade had one of the greatest NBA finals ever in year three, the first year LeBron was making it to the postseason. Like, Dwayne Wade already had it. And then when they did team up together, their first year together, it ended in LeBron's single worst professional moments, the series against Dallas, most notably the last three games. And this is where I don't think Dwayne Wade gets enough credit, because I don't know how much Dwayne Wade needed LeBron at that point.
At that point.
But LeBron desperately needed Dwayne Wade, because Dwayne Wade could have there said, you know what? Here's how we're going to win titles. It's not going to be you and me take turns, and it's not going to be me handing over the reins to you. It's going to be me, the champion, the guy of Dade County, Wade County, who is going to take over, and you're going to have to take a back seat. And instead, Dwayne Wade set his basketball ego aside, his professional ego aside, and said, despite what happened in Dallas, you're the best player on the team. Everything's got to run through you. And from that moment forward, it's that stretch of now 7.5 years that, in my eyes, has made LeBron James the greatest player ever, that has allowed LeBron to win three titles in the last 7 years. D-Wade had a chance in that offseason and in the beginning of that next year to change basketball history, I think for the worse, but maybe for his own ego for the better, and he didn't do it. And what they have done, and D-Wade also, his ability, when LeBron left Miami, cost D-Wade $10 million. And D-Wade said, don't care. Like, even if he cared, he took that up with the Heat, didn't let it come between their friendship. And for those two last night, it was a perfect ending. LeBron guarding him, then the ball, and then them two hugging at the end. It was a great ending for two of the three best players of their era. And it was awesome to see. And it's a shame it's the last time we'll see it, because this is going to be the last year of D-Wade's career.
It's such a unique relationship the two have had. You mentioned that he did get so emotional. Why do you think it brought LeBron to almost tears to be able to, you know, play with Wade, know Wade all these years, and then basically say goodbye in the basketball fashion to him last night?
Because it's one thing as a professional athlete for people in your family to be close to you, but for another guy who has a skill level that's comparable to yours and has achieved things like you on the court, there's a connection because there's an understanding. Like, I mean, we talk about things all the time. You guys ask me questions, and I try to give you really insightful stuff, but it's really hard to get the whole meaning unless you've been there, unless you've walked it with it. And when you're able to walk side by side with a person, then you're able to feel and or the input that you're able to give them, because Dwayne Wade also, he changed his game from a driver, high riser to he had to work on his shot to be able to clear more space for LeBron. So those connections right there and all the things I think that LeBron saw him in, LeBron doesn't have a bigger brother. But Dwayne Wade was that bigger brother. Sure. Dwayne Wade went to college. So even though, they came into the league the same time, Dwayne Wade was older and had a different type of maturity. Dwayne Wade was a father at a very, very young age. So those types of things, I believe, led to LeBron and the outpouring of emotion.
We look at these two guys and everyone's like, oh, LeBron's a much better basketball player. But how would you put Dwayne Wade's career into perspective for people that have not been following him nearly as closely as they followed LeBron?
All right, so these are, I just think, undeniable facts. He's the fourth greatest shooting guard ever, behind only Jordan, West, and Kobe. And some, the analytics folks would put him ahead of Kobe. I can't do that. He's unquestionably one of the 20 greatest players of all time. He's an 8-time All-NBA guy, a 13-time All-Star. He won a scoring title, won a Finals MVP in year 3. And that Finals, they were down 0-2 against Dallas. In the next four games, Dwayne Wade averaged 39-8-4. In 45 minutes per game. Dwayne Wade is an all-time minted great. And because his career really, he became great in year 2 and really by about year 11 was done being great. So, and we've now seen in recent memories, he's getting to the deterioration of Dwayne Wade. People shouldn't forget the 5 years before LeBron and he teamed up, he averaged 28-6-6 in the playoffs, 27-5-7 in the regular season. He was in the discussion for second best player in the world when LeBron and he teamed up, which is what created what a lot of people consider the first super team, which now obviously has become the trend in the NBA.
Very selfless. See, he signed all those great little things to LeBron. LeBron didn't write jack to Dwayne Wade. Obviously, that's what stressed me out the entire segment, but we'll talk much more about that. And we'll get much more into the relationship. They had some times along the way where they could have split up and they remained friends, so we'll get to that. We'll take a break, though. Coming up, what has gone so wrong for Kirk Cousins and the Vikings offense? That's next on First Things First. All right, finally, no Kawhi, no problem for the Toronto Raptors. Toronto beat the Warriors by 20 points last night, despite Kawhi being sidelined by a bruised hip. Kyle Lowry stepped up, 23 points, 12 assists. Steph Curry stepped down, just 10 points on 3 of 12 shooting. Nick, Raptors are 7-1 without Kawhi in the lineup this season. How impressive is that, along with the win over the Warriors last night?
You mentioned Steph. This was Steph's first legit bad game of the year. He's allowed to have one of those every 20 or so. He had been so good. Mm-hmm. But the big story last night is the Raptors. This game shocked me. For the Raptors, without their best player, to go into Oracle and win that game convincingly when they're on a back-to-back, after beating the Clippers without Kawhi Leonard, the Warriors are rested. I couldn't have seen this coming from 100 miles away, but it speaks to the progression of their players and the talent development. Kyle Lowry busted out of his shooting slump 2 days ago, continued that yesterday, and you are seeing the depth of the team. We talk about Boston having so much depth. Mm-hmm. I don't know that any team in the NBA, 1 through 10, has more quality guys. They can put out two different starting fives that are legitimate NBA starting fives. You saw that last year. They just didn't have the top level talent that they have this year, and they couldn't get over the mental block of LeBron. But this Raptors team is very legit, see, and what they did last night was as impressive a win as anybody's had in the NBA all year.
I tried to look for what did we miss, and what we didn't know, there were some unknowns as far as Kawhi to the general public, how healthy would he be? How would he get acclimated to this new team? Kawhi and his teammates are getting along great. I think it's very, very impressive for them to be as effective as they have been. This two-game road trip with the Clippers and the Warriors back-to-back to beat those two teams by the number of points they beat them without Kawhi, I believe, is impressive. Their younger players, how they would continue to develop, because we don't know. We don't know with coaching staffs. That's the big question with the Lakers. The Raptors players, they're developing. Those younger players, oh, man, they're developing.
Right.
Pascal and everything, you could see Durant and the Warriors struggle with his length. Serge Ibaka, this is the best I've seen him offensively, and that's a credit to Nick Nurse. What's his specialty? His specialty in the NBA is designing offenses and running offenses. So if you look at the difference between him and Dwayne Casey, the last coach, Casey, defensive specialist, Nurse, offensive specialist. So you can see with Kawhi, without Kawhi, what they try to do offensively and spreading the ball, passing the ball is far more effective. So even though they've been the best record in the East, this team I thought was better because how they function offensively, I thought that would be easier to carry over once we got into late in the season and into the playoffs.
I just want to follow up on two names you said before you jump in, Janet. Serge Ibaka, I thought he was done. Serge Ibaka in the playoffs last year was borderline unplayable. His contract was looked at like an albatross, and all of a sudden he is playing the best basketball he's played since he was in Oklahoma City. And Pascal Siakam, his jump from a guy who they drafted to be a defender to being a legitimate offensive threat seemingly overnight between year two and three has been an absolute revelation. And do not...
He developed a lot like Kawhi Leonard. When they got Kawhi from San Diego, not tremendous expectations. Drafted him as a what?
What? Drafted him as defensive specialist, 15th pick.
And then you start to see Kawhi start dribbling the ball. Kawhi got a little jump shot, and that's what you're seeing, the same type of development with, there in Toronto with their young star.
And I was just gonna, and the guy that came over with Kawhi, Danny Green, what he adds for them spacing-wise, having a 40-plus percent knockdown shooter out there and what it opens up for the rest of their offense has been excellent for them as well.
I've been sitting here for weeks listening to you guys talk about how good Toronto is, how good their bench is, and clearly how good Kawhi Leonard is. Have we put an unfair cap on this Toronto team, you know, out of the East, maybe take out of the East off? Is it possible that they could go head-to-head with the Warriors?
I don't think anyone can beat the Warriors, and I do think it should be noted the Warriors are about to get an all-NBA-level center added to this basketball team. And Steph Curry's not going to have 3 of 12 nights. Like, Draymond Green's not always going to get in early foul trouble. But I do not – there is no shame in being the second-best team in the NBA in this year with this stacked Warriors team. And I think the Raptors are, at this moment, clearly the second-best team in the NBA.
I believe they're the second-best team. I believe it will be a better series than we've seen in the other series because of their overall depth and Kawhi's ability to be able to go head-to-head with Durant. And then now Kawhi don't have to take him the whole game, all right? Because you got other young stars who have some length that they can put on him. I think Nick Nurse and the way they run their offense, Toronto is a serious contender. But right now, Golden State's only playing with 3 all-stars. All right, we talked about getting Cousins back. And, man, Draymond is not an all-star. He is not playing like an all-star. Only scored 2 points last night. His body language and how he's playing the game is not nearly where. So if he doesn't come out of what he's doing, they can get Draymond back. They would struggle with Toronto if Draymond continues to play at that level.
They were daring him to shoot. He finally took him up on it. He damn near missed the whole basket on one of them. Like, Draymond Green was never supposed to be a great shooter, but the year they won 73 games, you had to respect his shot. He now is worse than he was when he came into the league from the 3 ball, and that constricts them just a little bit.
Back here, first things first, we're joined by NBA champ Richard Jefferson. Hey, RJ, welcome back.
It's so good to be back.
What up?
Great to have you.
Welcome.
Thank you. I know you called the Laker game last night. We are going to get to the Lakers, but we're going to start with the Sixers and their current state of NBA affairs. The team is 11-4. When Jimmy Butler plays this season, just 9-8 in games without him. And recently, Joel Embiid had some comments about having to figure out his role a little better with Butler in there. Sixers currently sit in the 4th spot in the East. RJ, start with you. What's your assessment of the Sixers with Jimmy Butler there so far?
I love them with Jimmy Butler, but it's not about me loving them with Jimmy Butler. It's about the 76ers that were there before he showed up loving Jimmy Butler being there. And I'm not saying that there's any type of drama or controversy at all, but when you hear one of the best players in the NBA kind of, well, I got to figure out my role, I got to this, understand that Jimmy Butler is going to be a free agent, right? So you want him to be happy, but you also want the guys around him to be happy. You want this to be quote unquote Russell Westbrook, Paul George type of year.
Because you know, like Russell in OKC, it's Joel Embiid's franchise.
Yes, it is Joel. But Jimmy is the guy that's going to take the shots. He's aggressive. Like Jimmy is an alpha. He is. He shows up and he.
Even though it might be Joel Embiid's team, Jimmy is the leader.
He is the leader. He is the leader. He's the guy in the fourth quarter. He's a perimeter defender. But you don't like hearing this. All of a sudden, you're 11-4 with him, and you hear Joel Embiid talking about he's got to figure out his role. Your role is to help your team win games. And if this man helps me win games, Jerry West once said that. He said, winning is the most important thing to me. If that's not the most important thing to you, you're not going to like being around me, right? Mm-hmm. And that's just the way that Jimmy Butler kind of goes about things. Like, hey, he's unapologetic about how he plays.
And listen, Joel Embiid is one of my favorite players in the league, and one of the best players in the league. Agreed. He was Chris's preseason MVP pick, and he's played right at, if not just a tick below that level all year long. He needs to chill, though. Because the thing is this. Before Jimmy Butler got there, Embiid was averaging 18 shots a game. Since Jimmy Butler got there, he's averaging 18 shots a game. Before he got there, Joel's like, oh, now that he's here, I'm out. Just stretch five more often. Before he got there, he was shooting 4 threes a game. Since he got there, he's shooting 4 threes a game. Like, he is the piece they desperately needed. Ben Simmons didn't, we can talk more about this part later, grow his game the way I thought he would this offseason. And so they were in a spot where, all right, the regular season is one thing, but particularly in the playoffs, late possessions, who can we give the ball to and say, create your own shot? They didn't have that on their roster. They were going to have to rely on J.J. Redick for as good as Redick is in his role. That ain't his role.
No.
So if Embiid wants to play in more meaningful games than a game 5 of an Eastern Conference semis, then this is the guy you needed. So, and now Jimmy, I know he can be prickly, and I know there's a long list of teammates that haven't loved playing with Jimmy Butler. They all got to come together. This is where Brett Brown's got to be important, because without Jimmy Butler, this team had a ceiling. With Jimmy Butler, the ceiling is make the NBA Finals and see what happens. Like, so they've got to figure this out because they needed this player.
Well, and you look at it, you have a full year of recruitment. A full year of recruitment.
Right.
And so when you start, and it's weird, it's like you see success. It's like, wait, you guys are 11-4. You guys were kind of struggling. Part of the reason why you made this move is because it didn't look like you guys were going to be able to compete with Milwaukee, Toronto, and Boston.
No.
Right? It didn't look that way. And so they made a move and got probably the most coveted guy out there from the perimeter standpoint that people knew you could probably go get right now. And so when you look at that and all of a sudden you're just like, oh, there could be a little bit of an issue here.
So if his numbers are similar to where they were last year, what is Joel Embiid complaining about?
Well, he should be complaining about this lack of court space, because this is the biggest problem. Their player development's really, it's failed Joel Embiid, because Ben Simmons, as I said last year, he's going to come back in 2018. He's not going to be able to shoot. The hardest skill for someone to learn in the NBA, it's not how to defend, the pace of the game. No, it is from I can't shoot to being able to shoot from distance. It has ended more NBA careers than anything else out there. So I didn't think he was going to be able to shoot this year. The jury's still going to be out. I have not seen where a person is not comfortable shooting from 10 feet and then all of a sudden they can shoot from 25. It will be something that I haven't seen. Markelle Fultz, he's not even with the team anymore. So neither one of those top draft picks developing. Now the lane is clogged. So playing with Ben Simmons is like playing with another 7-footer, because he cannot expand his game. His defender is going to be in the paint. That's either him posting up or sagging off of him, help defense, because if they give them the ball at 12 feet, he is not a threat to be able to score the basketball. So those are Joel Embiid's. Those are things he should be complaining about compared to having someone, Jimmy Butler, who spaces the court, can defend, can also take big shots that a lot of guys don't want to take.
Yeah, no, and that's the thing, even with, you know, to add to your point about Ben Simmons, is that late game, last 2 minutes, you can't even really have the ball in his hands because he can't shoot free throws. So you're talking about really Ben Simmons is one of the best players in the NBA. So when you look at what your team needs in filling a gap to help your team be successful, I don't think that there was no one that they could have gone and gotten, and you've seen it with their record 11-4. But this is where Joel Embiid, when you talk about 18 shots, four threes, that it's consistent. Where people don't see it, it's the rhythm in which it comes.
Sure.
I get to take my time. Mm. I get to pick this shot. I get to pass these two up because I want to, you know, just kind of ease into the game. When all of a sudden Jimmy Butler shows up and you're like, oh, if I don't shoot this now,
I'm not
going to get it again. So maybe I'm not shooting the shots that I want at the pace that I want, but that's on you. Your role, Jimmy's going to do Jimmy. Your job is to figure out how to turn this 11-4 into a 15-5 into a 20-6 stretch. That's your job.
And the Phillies' other real job is to figure out why they stink on the road. Because they have been a dominant home team, and they just pre and post Jimmy have not been a good road team. But I thought something really interesting happened when you were talking about the limitations in Ben Simmons' game. Richard was doing everything but saying amen. And then then right after that, he said, but let's be honest, he's one of the best players in the league.
Yes. So
both these things are true. Mm-hmm. He is one of the best players in the league. He just has as gaping
Is he best based on potential?
Because
the different ways he can put his imprint on the game.
On the game.
Yeah.
He is like, let's say he is a 6'10 Jason Kidd, early Jason Kidd. He does so many things in so many different ways, but if you can't shoot, and to your point, you can learn how to shoot. It just takes years. It takes years and years in practice, and you might not see that until year 5 or 6.
And what was disappointing for me is we had Blake Griffin sitting here a month and a half ago, and he talked about how he had to basically remake his shot to learn how to turn those long twos, which he loved, into three-pointers. And he talked about how it was embarrassing. Mm-hmm. How he didn't want people in the gym with him because this is an NBA all-star who's, you know, he's missing the rim, he's missing left, missing right.
And I've seen him at MiraCosta High School, which is right in Hermosa Beach, instead of being at the Clippers facility, which is 2 miles away, because he didn't want anybody in the gym.
He didn't want anybody to see him.
I've seen
it. And what was disappointing to me, even if it is going to take years, if it's going to happen for Ben Simmons, is he hasn't added a foot to his range. Yeah. Like, he is just as hesitant this year to take those shots as he was last year. That I didn't anticipate. I'll give you credit. See, you said, I'll believe it when I see it. I'm not assigning faith that it's going to happen. I thought he would add a little bit to his game that we haven't seen this year. It's one of the reasons they needed Jimmy Butler so badly.
All right, RJ, stick around. Coming up, what went wrong for the Lakers last night? It wasn't you, and it wasn't you. Next on First Things First.
Lakers.
On Sunday, great sweat and highlighted by the Buccaneers facing off against Zeke and the Cowboys, or it's Khalil Mack and the Bears taking on the 49ers. It is all on Fox and the Fox Sports app. Check your local listings for the game in your area. Back here with Richard Jefferson, we are going viral. LeBron James dropped 36, 13-8, and the Lakers lost to the Nets in Brooklyn last night. The aforementioned Richard Jefferson had some pretty, pretty, pretty good seats to watch the King.
It's still a little weird seeing him in the purple and gold.
I'm not used to it yet. RJ?
No, it is.
A handshake.
Good to
for
see
RJ.
You, buddy. How's everything, man? You look great in the purple and gold. Yeah.
LeBron, thank you. Yeah. He could have pulled me off there.
You're good. You look good. You look good. You look good in the purple and gold.
He can't hear you, RJ.
Fraud, Richard. You were like, yeah, I'm not used to seeing him in the purple. Oh, you look great, Bron.
Well, I'm telling him that. You don't want to say, but man, it looks weird. You just look straight. You want to send everybody out there with feeling as good about themselves as they can. So it was like, yeah, it is strange, but I'll tell him he looks good. Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah.
I love it. Good stuff. All right, well, that was the bright spot for LeBron last night, the maybe only bright spot. The game didn't go the Lakers' way. Here's LeBron James with more on that.
Our team is built on depth and energy. And, for the last couple games, we didn't have our depth. Tonight, we had some energy, but we didn't have our depth. We got to continue to get better. We don't just take the losses and throw them away. You know, not in the Wild Wild West, when every game counts. Every game matters. And, could have had a pretty good road trip, but going 1-3 is definitely not the way that we would like to have it.
RJ, the depth he's talking about, Ingram, Rondo, JaVale McGee all out last night. What do you think was the key to this game?
Well, that was it. Now, in the NBA, there are no excuses, right? You show up there and I sent him a text and was like, hey, get your rest. Like, the Nets are playing well, right? And I believe in the Nets, and I believe that Kenny Atkinson is doing some very, very good things with the young guys. And the style that they play is very hard to guard because it's just they got two guys that can play one-on-one, right, in D'Angelo and Spencer Dinwiddie, and then the rest of everyone just flow. Everyone gets to play. It's up and down.
They're hard to defend.
They're hard to defend. And even during that eight-game losing streak, they had a couple of difficult losses, like up seven with 30 seconds ago, up 18 in the fourth. So that's not as indicative of that eight stretch. It's not of who they are. But I think for Bron and the Lakers, it's they were missing some depth. And they had a stretch where they probably missed 10 to 12 straight threes. And if you don't have that depth to just keep guys going in and out, it becomes very, very difficult because, again, they're still limited in those areas. And even with all that being said, after going 1-3 on this road trip, they're fourth in the West right now.
Fourth in the West, but with no margin anymore. Like, fourth in the West, but only, a game and a half out of ninth. Yes. So, like, that, they are fourth in the West, but this was, just like Sunday was a missed opportunity when nobody showed up, including LeBron, his worst game of the year, or second worst game of the year, maybe. And then last night, a missed opportunity because LeBron was great, and they couldn't find a way to win. When we're talking about the depth, Mo Wagner and Zubats getting 10 minutes at center is a problem. In those, like, in those 10 minutes at center, you're outscored by 6 points and you lose by five. KCP is a nice rotation player. Zvi Mykhailiuk is years away from being a rotation player. Those two guys got 43 minutes in the game. Like, that is where the depth comes into play. I know you rightfully focus more on the guys who were out there and their defense, the guys who are part of the everyday rotation and them not showing up defensively, and I get that. But that's where it's not an excuse LeBron's making as much as an explanation. Like, they were limited at center before they signed Tyson Chandler and before JaVale got hurt. Mm-hmm. And so you saw that, and you saw them miss Ingram a bit last night as well.
Yeah, in a four-game road trip like this, I'm not expecting the point guard position to be at such a deficit. In Houston, first night, they give up 50 to Harden, all right? Now, they kept Kemba in check with the two triple-doubles, Lonzo and LeBron in Charlotte. But then I get John Wall. John Wall's coming off he looks out of shape. I saw him in the Cleveland about 10 days ago with the game that he missed. The training staff was not happy. His wife was having a baby. He hadn't been in shape, having problems with his knee. He drops 40 on you. I would think at this point in the season, you'd have to lock John Wall in the gym for him to be able to get 40 on you. And then last night, D'Angelo, he gets some revenge on the team that gave up on him, 22-13. Lonzo Ball, I expect you to be a better defender. He's a better athlete. They should not get dominated at the point guard position. In a four-game road stretch, it's hard to win games when you have that type of productivity from the point guard.
Well, and even Josh Hart. So you have Josh Hart, you have KCP. Like, these two guys are expected to be kind of your, like, 2-and-D or 3-and-D guy. Mm-hmm. Just go out there and play high-level defense. The Lakers as a whole, their unit was a little discombobulated. They didn't play great defense. You saw, like, key moments in the game, they were giving up layups, and Jared Dudley
had a dribble handoff.
Any triple switch that they did, which, again, this is young communications. And I'll give you an example. It's very, very difficult to build continuity. They only have one player that's on their roster from the first year that Walton took over, which this is only his third season. There's one player on that team, and that's Brandon Ingram.
Yep.
That's Brandon Ingram is the only player that's still on that team. So you know how hard that is to have 15 different guys in 2 years?
Yeah, with the lack of practice time.
And you're including this in very, very young players. So you spend 3 years on Julius Randle. You spend two years working with D'Angelo. And all of a sudden you just have this turnover constantly, and you're trying to teach defensive principles and consistency. It's very difficult.
So are we disappointed with this current road trip, or is this part of the process? Learning how to win on the road, learning how to create your own depth when it's not there, learning how to win, period, with LeBron James at the helm?
It's actually both. You want them to feel disappointed with this result. Right now, it's part of the process, but part of the process is also feeling disappointed, right? So that when you go on another three-game road trip, you're like, hey, guys, last time we went on the road, now let's learn our lesson. Even if we go 2-2, that's still an improvement, right? You want to continue to improve. So, yes, it is a part of the process, and they should feel disappointed, but they should feel disappointed moving forward.
But here's the things that have to get get buttoned up, because if you look at their schedule just from here on out, there are two stretches of their schedule that are absolutely brutal as far as good team after good team, home and road. It's the stretch leading up to the All-Star break and right after the All-Star break, right around the trade deadline. And then the final six games of the year, you are playing, I think, five against the Thunder, Warriors, Nuggets. You're playing some of the best teams in the league in that final six games. They're not going to have a margin at the end of the year. Yeah. At the end of the year, whatever spot the Lakers are in the West, unless LeBron's able to activate like playoff mode a few weeks early, they are going to drop a few slots. So that's where games like this, the home loss to Orlando on a, you're supposed to, the Lakers, I don't care who's on the team, should never lose a 12:30 tip time on a Sunday in Los Angeles. That is a scheduled loss for the opponent, and they lost that one. So, like, these types of games really matter. Like, the one they stole against San Antonio, that's great. You gave one back last night against Brooklyn.
Well, what about those free throws, too? Because LeBron's got me shook. All right, I had a guy yelling at me last night. That's why Kobe's better. He do with a Lakers jersey on. I'm like, man, please be quiet, man. No need to hear that. But you are right. And I'm tired of them missing. They missed 10 free throws last night. The Nets only made 13. The Lakers missed 10 free throws. And LeBron being weak at the and last night, man, he was concentrating. He was trying to get into a different rhythm. He was doing all he could do at the free throw line. It hurts a team when you can't make free throws on a consistent basis. And it stops you from driving to the hole late in games because you don't want to get fouled.
No, again, and Bron, to end games, he needs that knockdown free throw shooter. You look at teams that he's played with, he's had 85 guys. When you're playing with Mike Miller, Shane Battier, Korver, Kyrie Irving, like Ray Allen, you have guys that finish the game. I'll get you to the extra point. You guys just finish this off. Well, and go ahead.
No, you were on the team when Korver helped him reinvent his free throw stroke.
Yeah.
And there was a brief period of time where he had it. Then last year he was struggling. The way he fixed it last year was cheating. Yeah. He just lane violated every single time. And then
is that cheating?
Well, cheating's maybe strong. But Ken Maurer called him on it, and now he doesn't do that step over anymore.
Yeah.
It's one of the reasons why early in the year when we had the whole national emergency about LeBron missing those two free throws and was about, oh, is he clutch? The point I was making is it's not an end-of-game situation. The guy right now is a bad free throw shooter
throughout
the game. And I think you said it during the game. It almost feels infectious.
Yeah, like, it is.
The Lakers are the worst free throw shooting team.
Oh, there is no doubt. It's like
NBA.
Dropping a pass in the NFL. Oh, the sure-handed guy dropped one? Oh, you can believe it's starting to go through the team, and the free throw shooting is exactly the same.
And I'll say this one thing about the construct of this Laker team. Over years, you find success. Like, certain players need certain things around them to be successful, right? Steph Curry, he needs a wing player that can play that allows Steph Curry to play off the ball, right? Mm-hmm. As a point guard, he needs a high-level wing that can handle the ball, whether it's Draymond, Andre Iguodala. Shaq was great. Shaq always needed a high-level scorer next to him. Bron needs shooters, right? There's a certain equation that goes with high-level players that as long as we give him this, we will maximize him and we will maximize what we're capable of doing. They don't have that necessarily around him right now.
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern. For Chris Carter and Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. So long, everybody.